There's a dream that I have every so often, and I've had it over the last 15 or 20 years, and when I have it, it always wakes me up with a startle. And I notice some dreams may mean something, especially if they're reoccurring, not necessarily something prophetic, but maybe something physical, something mental, something else going on in your life that you've got. But beside that point, if I'm really tired, say I go to bed one night, I might wake up in the middle of the night in a panic thinking that it's Sunday morning and I have forgotten to prepare anything for that week. In this dream, I'm usually walking up to the pulpit, but I don't have a Bible. I don't have any notes. And it's in that moment that I'm standing here with a realization that I forgot what it is that I was supposed to do this week. I was distracted by something else. I just didn't prepare my sermon. And here I am in front of you with nothing at all to say. Now, that has never happened, of course. Maybe you thought, okay, he should have some more notes. But no, that's never happened before where I wasn't prepared. Maybe there was a week or two where I wished I had a little bit more time to dive into a verse, but never having forgotten that Sunday morning was coming. To do so would be to miss the necessary focus for which I've been called here. But perhaps you know where I'm coming from. Maybe when you were younger, it was a test you didn't study for, you forgot about. Or a project and you wrote down the wrong date and you show up and you realize, oh, that was due today? Or if it's a job, hopefully this doesn't happen to you, you just didn't show up because you wrote the schedule down wrong. Typically, I would say that most of us are able to keep up with the necessary functions of life. There's a necessary focus that we have for things that are important to us, whether it's getting up and going to school, whether it's being on time for work, or even like this morning, you set your clocks back and you're here this morning. In other cases, though, have you ever forgotten to call back a friend? Or better yet, text them back a simple answer to a question they ask you. Sometimes I talk to people in the late afternoon and they tell me they forgot to eat lunch. That one always blows my mind. For me, noon rolls around and I don't have to see a clock. I know it's lunchtime. Or sometimes I hear, I didn't know we were doing that event when the date has been emailed out and it's been in the bulletin for a month. Either way, it is easy to divert our attention away, to get distracted, and to lose focus. But this morning, I want to look at what our necessary focus is. And I want to see that with two ladies named Mary and Martha from Luke chapter 10. So if you would, turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 10. We'll look at verses 38 through 42 as we continue in our series through the Gospel of Luke. You know, it seems as though there's more to do today than there was even yesterday, doesn't it? And any time you think that a break is coming, there seems to be 10,000 other things that show up on your to-do list. You might have work demands. You might have a home project that you realize you have to work on. You might have a friend that you feel as though you need to catch up with. And let's not forget the outreach events planned by the church, of course. We are busier now than we were last year, and last year seems to be busier than the year before. No matter what age you are, no matter what stage of life you are in, it's not hard to occupy your time. Yet the progression of technology is said to help us to streamline our time, isn't it? And in some ways it has. We can microwave our food. Let's not take that for granted. We can text a friend. We can order virtually whatever it is you want, and it could be on your doorstep the next morning. In many ways, we are witnessing the acceleration of just about everything in life, which should make you wonder, how much faster can we move in this life? Whatever happened on the other side of the world, you can know in seconds. You can now run into an old friend and have nothing at all to say to them because you've already caught up on everything that's going on in their life because you're on social media with them. We live in hyperspeed, where life flies by in an instant. Yet the one thing in our life that we cannot accelerate is our spiritual growth. There's no way to streamline godliness into your heart. There's no quick fix for holiness. There's no immediate access for maturity in the faith. And I think, especially as believers here in the 21st century, I think we can struggle with that a bit. With everything else in our life occurring at a pace and faster and when we want it and how we want it, our spiritual lives, they still require patience. time and focus. Fighting off temptation isn't a one step, two step, and now we're done, we move on. Reading your Bible doesn't come through seeing a paragraph summary or listening very briefly for 5 minutes in the morning. Prayer doesn't occur through typing out a few emojis to get your point across to God. No, to deepen our love for Jesus, we must keep a necessary focus. This morning, as we come to verse 38 of Luke chapter 10, we see that the struggle to keep our necessary focus is not a new one. And we see that once again with two sisters named Mary and Martha as they welcomed Jesus into their home. Yet this visit was not planned out, wasn't streamlined, wasn't prepackaged, it wasn't prepared for them. It would require from them a necessary focus. So let's take a look at how this visit goes with Mary and Martha and then consider our necessary focus this morning as we read from Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 42. Luke chapter 10, beginning in verse 38. Now, as they went along on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she went up to him and she said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Martha has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her." Many of us have perhaps traveled to go and see family and friends before. Trips like perhaps what might be coming up for you even in a couple weeks with Thanksgiving weekend coming up. These trips sometimes take months to plan out, especially if you have to fly a great distance to go see someone. Or they can even be planned the week before, or in some cases even the day before, if they're just merely a couple hour trip for over the weekend. For the president, though, traveling is a different story. For the president, the travel requires a massive logistical operation involving Secret Service for security, military aircraft like Air Force One or Marine One to transport him, and then numerous support staff and planning to execute this. His travel requires extensive advanced work and communications and much support staff ahead of him, often even traveling in other planes beside him, in front of him, or behind him. And the cost of these trips can be enormous too. I once heard that these trips have to be planned out months in advance, not simply for logistical reasons, but Secret Service will go into places where the president might be coming, and they will scope the area out and ingrain themselves in the community so that you think they're part of the community. And then when the president comes, you don't think twice about the person walking through the crowd. Queen Elizabeth's visit to the United States some years ago was even more expensive, or extensive and expensive, though. Apparently, on one of her visits, she brought with her just about everything possible she would need. It was said that she brought 4,000 pounds of luggage with her, which included two outfits for every single occasion, 40 pints of plasma in case of an emergency, that royal line, her own hairdresser, two valets, and a host of other staff to attend to every single need she might have. This brief visit from the Queen to the United States was estimated to cost over $20 million. But can you imagine how you would react if the Queen or the President showed up to your door? Not planned, but unannounced. Would you say, as they're standing at the door, "Oh, I have nothing planned," or, "Oh, hold on, let me just straighten up the living room real quick. Let me put a new towel in the bathroom for you. All I have is water to drink. I hope that's okay. I might have some bread to eat," whatever it might be. Or maybe you wouldn't even answer the door. It's one thing if your mom or dad or brother and sister shows up unannounced, or a friend texts you and says, "Hey, I'm on my way. I'm just going to stop by for a minute." But royalty or prominence or importance, how would you handle this type of visit? How about this? Perhaps you've heard this question before. What would you do if Jesus showed up to your door, unannounced and unplanned on your part? What would you do? Get your Bible out, put it on the end table? Turn off what you're watching on TV? Put your phone down, perhaps? This is what happens here with Mary and Martha. Look at verse 38 here again. Luke says, now as they were on their way, Jesus entered a village. So literally what this means, Jesus is traveling along and he comes up to a village, almost like happenstance. Now there are two quick things I wanted to notice here before we move forward. First, they, that's plural. Jesus is not traveling alone. That adds a little bit more of a dynamic to the story. He is with at least, we would assume, the 12. Or since this comes right on the heels of the lawyer and the Good Samaritan, and then right on the heels further of Jesus sending the 72 out and receiving them back, we could potentially imagine a scenario where Jesus is with 72 other men here. Either way, there's likely a group that show up to Mary and Martha's door. But then as they're traveling along, it makes it sound like, again, as Jesus, as if he's just walking with these men and he says, hey, you know what? It's starting to get dark. I've got some really good friends that live in a nearby village. John 11 indicates that village is the town of Bethany, which is just right outside of Jerusalem. I've got some friends who live over in Bethany. Let's stop in for dinner. They won't mind. Maybe we could spend the night there. So then let's back up and let's set the scene up again. Mary, Martha, and from all other accounts, as we see in John chapter 11, we know that they have a brother named Lazarus. They're sitting around their table. You imagine evening perhaps is coming. They're at home. Maybe they're talking about what the next few days are going to look like. Yeah, I've got to go into town. I've got to get some wheat. We're running low. I need to make some more bread. I need to go get some water from the well. I need to fix the front door. I'm going to go see the carpenter, whatever it might be. When all of a sudden, I wonder who that could be. Door opens and it's Jesus with all these men with him. What do you do? Not only is this a friend, which I think should cause us to pause at least just for a second on that point, and consider, yes, Jesus had friends, genuine friends, people who loved him, who weren't following him just for his miracles, but who really had a relationship with him, who loved just sharing stories with him, perhaps talking about childhood events that they did and just conversing back and forth with him. And Jesus here, he considered Mary and Martha his good friends. They weren't merely people he was partners with. Perhaps they were partners in ministry in some ways when they met up, but these were his friends. People he could depend on, people he knew loved him. And yes, he was friends with Mary and Martha, who were both females. And at the same time, though, Mary and Martha, by all accounts here, acknowledge that this is the sovereign Lord of the universe. So what does all that mean? Well, you don't turn him away. You serve a friend, but you also worship him as Lord. Yet, again, you're not fully prepared. Well, this is the scene that said, as we now see two responses to this unannounced visit from Mary and Martha here in Luke chapter 10. So let's take a look at the first response as we see eager attention. So you can imagine what Christmas Eve right here in this room, 1950, would have looked like in this church. I think we've reached the stage where now we can say that nobody was here for that date and what happened on that evening. Correct? Either way, it was a dedication ceremony for our sanctuary, and none other than President Harry S. Truman would do the honors. Now, in many ways, that's something unheard of, isn't it? To have the President of the United States come and dedicate your church building? But in another sense, we have to remember he was a member here until 1972. If you've seen the picture out in the, as you head towards the Faith Center Gym, that hallway right there on the left side, you've seen that picture, and you've showed me the picture, of course. You have the picture of President Truman. It's on that night. He's speaking to a packed crowd here. But at the same time, too, in the caption under the picture will tell you this, you have Secret Service agents stationed everywhere as they're watching the crowd, and I imagine come and have come early to prepare the visit, keeping eyes on every single person who was here as they watched the president speak. Meaning that, as we said earlier about those in high positions, an event like that that happened even 75 years ago, just didn't happen. It takes people working behind the scenes, running back and forth to make sure everything is online or in line. They didn't have online, in line and on track. The same thing is true with Jesus coming to Mary and Martha's house. Now, both Mary and Martha, they pay eager attention to Jesus and his entourage, but they perhaps do so in different ways, which is what distinguishes the story for what it is. Now, Martha here, she often gets a bad rap, doesn't she? She's the one who doesn't care about what Jesus is doing. Mary's better, Martha's bad. But there is more to the story than just simply characterizing these two sisters like that right off the bat. As a baseline, we must recognize some of the commonalities between Mary and Martha. As we said earlier, they're both good friends of Jesus, perhaps very close friends of his. You know that the house, perhaps that you go to, maybe you've gone there before, a house that you show up to, a good friend's house, a family member's house, maybe a grandparent's house, and you show up and you're immediately welcomed in and you walk in and it feels just like home. You don't hesitate to go to the refrigerator, get yourself a snack. You know where the plates are. You know where the cups are. You sit on the couch. You don't hesitate to grab the blanket after on the back of the couch. You sit down and you curl up and you're cozy. You're comfortable. This feels like home. Much of that feeling for Jesus, perhaps in Mary and Martha's home, was there. And that feeling that Jesus may have had in that home, in all likelihood, may have been due to Martha. There was an eager attention on her behalf given to hospitality. At the same time, they probably leaned into every word that Jesus said, asked him good questions, stayed with every story that he told. They were eager to hear about not just these miracles that might benefit them, but about Jesus and his life, about his family, about what had happened the day before. You know that friend that you might have, the one that can seem to draw you out, the one that asks those details that you don't readily share with everyone, the one who's not going to look down on you when you share a struggle that you have with them, but asks follow-up questions and wants to know more. That type of comfortability in a home would have likely been due more to Mary, perhaps, in this scenario. Both of these women, they had their gifts, and both were good display of the gifts that God had given to them. And in this situation here with Jesus and his disciples, we see both of these women doing what it is that they do best. Martha serving, taking care of the guests, showing hospitality, and Mary with Jesus, this time not talking, but perhaps just simply listening as he teaches. Now, there is something significant going on here that's not really the main point of the story, yet I think it's still something significant to bring up. And that's the fact that Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet. For her sitting at his feet is not given to her because it was her home or that this is some sort of lowly position that she was placed in. But no, she's sitting at his feet as a disciple. And this would have not been completely unheard of in those days for a woman to sit at the feet of a rabbi or a teacher and learn, but it just simply wasn't that common. In fact, it would have been likely frowned upon by many of the other in the community of rabbis or teachers for you to allow a female or a woman to sit at your feet and learn. Yet Jesus, as we continue to show or continue to see throughout the Gospel of Luke, and Luke is very intentional to show to us, he doesn't care about societal pressures and sinful prejudices. For he is the one who calls children to himself. He is the one who calls not just men, but women to himself in discipleship and in ministry with him. And what we see here is an eager attention given to Jesus from two women who show both forms of discipleship and ministry, with one being the form of listening and learning and seeking wisdom, and the other doing this sort of outward thinking and serving of others. Both are traits of discipleship, and both women show eager attention to these traits, meaning that as followers of Jesus Christ, as we take just note of this, we can't simply be content with only soaking in and filling up our minds, but we must be active in serving as well. While at the same time, we can't just simply neglect the fashioning of our hearts through listening to the Word of God. No, we must show eager attention to both. Yet, as we see that even here in Luke 10, there's something not right in Mary and Martha's home. For as both are giving eager attention to Jesus, we see Martha caught up in distracted serving. So from time to time, I'll help out with our association and going into churches that are seeking and requesting help for revitalization, churches that are looking for renewal, churches that have begun to dwindle down and looking for some sort of help and knowing what to do with their future and to how to bring life back to the church. One of the common things that occurs in some of these churches, churches again that have dwindled down to just a handful of members, is that they still have 25 to 30 different committees on tap. Now, there's nothing inherently wrong with committees. They can be overdone at times where you have to have a committee to make every single decision the church would ever think of. But by and large, if used properly, committees can really help the organization of a church. Yet in the scenarios and where I'm talking about, sometimes churches will cling to their committees because that's how they view service. How will people serve? How are we going to plug them in if there's not a committee for them to join? Ultimately, that's not the real problem in churches, though. Now, as important as structure may be, what we can find is that sometimes it's easier to serve with a group that gets distracted by the organization of the church than to actually dive deep into relationship with others. Think about it. What is easier, to come to church and meet with your committee and plan for the upcoming event, which, by the way, is, again, is a necessary function, or to come to church and have that hard conversation with a friend who's struggling with sin? Let's take this even further. What is easier, to look over notes and see what supplies need to be purchased, or to deal with your own heart where you might need to change? Now, again, please don't hear me wrong here. We need people to take care of the day in and day out functions of the church. Just like Martha knew that there needed to be someone who could feed the guests in her home. But at the same time, we can't neglect the hard work of the heart. For though there are tasks in the church that we could likely even do in our sleep, others such as growing in godliness, as we said earlier, they can't be scheduled and require our necessary focus. And Mary, I think she recognizes that here. Now, often we hear this story and we assume that Mary did absolutely nothing and that Martha did everything. And with Martha likely being the older sister here, she probably took responsibility to make sure that their guests had what it is that they needed. She might have been known as the homemaker, the keeper of the home, perhaps. But that doesn't mean that Mary didn't take the men's cloaks when they came in. That doesn't mean that she didn't bring the bread over to them or get them water. Let's not neglect the fact that Mary likely did have some part in welcoming these guests and serving them. But what happens when we get caught up in thinking that we're the only one who ever does anything? We then begin to move into self-pity. We walk around saying things like, woe is me. If I could just get a little bit more help around here, Martha's perhaps thinking, then maybe this dinner would have gone a little bit more smoothly. If I could get a little bit more help, perhaps we might say, with this ministry, with this committee, with this house, this job, this team, the kids, this place, everything would just function a little bit better. And then what happens? What happens when that self-pity begins to function into our hearts? We get distracted away from the real issue, which is in some ways what we saw last week, the real issue of loving God and loving others. If we're honest, for most of us, it isn't the horrible public sins that choke out our faith. No, often it's more of what Jerry Bridges calls the respectable sins. You know, the discontentment in life, the selfishness in your heart, the worry that consumes you, the pride that we carry. For Martha, what was choking out her faith was her distraction. She was doing good on the outside, a good thing that was, in all honesty, probably carried out with a heart that did long to serve Jesus. And it was a needed function. Someone did have to go get the food. Someone did have to prep the table. Someone did have to go take the cloaks. Someone did have to do all those things. And yes, again, Mary probably helped. But what happens? Mary came back to Jesus, whereas Martha got distracted even in doing a good thing. Now, before we see how Martha responds, there is something else I think we need to see. You see, at the point where this dinner took place, when Jesus shows up, it was likely right around the Feast of the Booths, or perhaps just prior to it. Perhaps, and we don't know this, perhaps he's traveling to Jerusalem. Bethany is outside of Jerusalem. Maybe he's going to Jerusalem for the feast. Either way, this was an annual time when everything was simplified in life. The faithful Jews, they would build their makeshift shelters and put them out in the courtyard where they would spend the evenings reflecting on God's deliverance of them from the slavery that they were in Egypt hundreds and thousands of years before. They would reflect upon his provision for them in the wilderness. And they did this every single year as they remembered what the Lord had done. And this time, it wasn't usually big traditional meals, but no, it was, as one author wrote, more of a time just for a sandwich. But Martha, what? She's driven here by her nature and her temperament to put on a feast. She loves doing these types of things for others, I imagine. This is evidently what she does to show that she cares. She just can't set a sandwich out for you. She thinks, my dinner guest is the Lord of the universe. I can't just go get cheese and crackers for him. During this festival week, the typical meal was simply serving fruit, vegetables, things that were, again, simple, quick, and easy. But she apparently forgot all of this because she gets so distracted in the moment that now her thought isn't the one who came to deliver her, but on what she can, in her own mind, deliver to him. So how does Martha respond? The end of verse 40. Lord, do you not care that my sister is not even helping me? Do you not care that Mary has left me to serve you all alone? Again, here it implies that Mary, as we said earlier, did nothing, but has only left to go sit at the feet of Jesus. And now she complains that she is all alone. It's a classic, I'm the only one who does anything around here statement, along with the attitude that would have said, if I didn't make dinner, no one would have it. She's almost like the animated action hero, Mr. Incredible, who complains about his job, where he says, sometimes I feel like the maid. I just clean this place up. Can't you keep it clean for 10 minutes? Some of you know what I'm talking about, Mr. Incredible. How many times have we thought like this, though? If I didn't work this job, this place would crumble. If I didn't clean this house, it would always be dirty. If I didn't serve this ministry, no one would. I once had someone come up to me and said, if we leave this church, the church will die because we do so much here. That type of attitude is not completely uncommon among us, and we may not always verbalize it, which is actually probably a good thing. But the attitude that thinks, why won't anyone do what I'm doing? Don't they see how important this task is? Why is this ministry that I love not given more importance? I do everything for it. And what ends up happening is that you become distracted with what you're doing, consumed in the work, filled with self-pity, since no one helps you. Which then what? Let's take this out. Leads you then to begin to judge those who do not think like you do, with your identity wrapped up in what you do rather than in what has been done for you in Jesus. And this doesn't just happen within the church either, does it? It can happen to a mom who begins to find her identity in taking care of her children, to a worker who finds his identity in his job, to a student who finds his identity in school, to a person who finds a hobby or a sport where their identity and their mind is then located. You see, we must remember that this passage, again, as we said just a few minutes ago, it follows right on the heels of the lawyer who was looking for a way to justify himself to Jesus. And Jesus went away from his actions and went right to his heart. Well, Martha here, yes, again, she's doing a good thing. But what was she concerned about? Her ministry, her service, her doing. And so when she comes to Jesus and she says, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? She sort of asks this in a rhetorical way, expecting that Jesus is going to be like, oh my goodness, Martha, I didn't even notice. Martha, you're right. Mary, get up. What are you doing? Go help your sister. Your service should be priority. But what does he do? He doesn't do that, does he? Instead, he tells Martha what Mary has chosen is the good portion. Verse 41, Jesus says to her, Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. I'll stop there. One thing is necessary. One thing matters more than many things. Now think about this again. Martha is in her element, carrying out her gifts, fulfilling all that she sees as important right in front of her. And Jesus tells her, Martha, you're missing it. You're missing the point. And he doesn't say this in a condemning type of way, which in some ways is amazing here. For when he calls and he says, Martha, Martha, he says it twice. He says it in sort of an emotional, soft kind of tone, calling her back to himself. He's not trying to put her in her place or to come down hard on her. For as often as perhaps we've even experienced in our own life, when the Holy Spirit may convict us when we get a bit off course, Jesus says to Martha, in effect, come to me, Martha. You're anxious about so many things. Place that burden on me. As we read earlier in Matthew 11, come to me and I'll be your rest. That's a hard thing to do, isn't it? When you have the biggest test you've ever taken coming the next day, or you have a career-defining project looming over you, or the biggest game you'll ever play is tomorrow, or the event that you've been looking forward to all year is next week, when someone comes to you and they say, hey, you know what? Just relax. The first thing in your mind isn't, yeah, you know what? I need to calm down. No, it is, how can you say that? I've got so much to do here. I can't stop now. But here's what Martha needed to see. Her problem wasn't focusing on something that didn't matter as much as something else. She lost focus. Now, Jesus is not telling her, look, everything that you've been doing doesn't matter anymore. No, he's effectively saying everything that you've been doing is now distracting you from something else that you ought to be doing now in the moment. There is a balance working between worship and working. This isn't a problem with her activity. The problem is her priority. There will always be 1,000 responsibilities that try to pull you away from that one relationship. And Martha demonstrates that here for us. Martha's preparations for their gathering, they overshadowed the whole purpose of the gathering. It wasn't just about a meal she was cooking, as helpful as that was, and again, even needed as that was, and as much as they might enjoy it. But no, it was about the meal that Jesus was now delivering at that moment through his words. So notice what Jesus says next to her in verse 42. He says, no, Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her. Now, you may not notice this at first glance, but Jesus is doing a play on words here. In the original language here, you see that word portion is the word for food. So then Jesus is saying, Martha, you need to know that while you're focused on our food, on our meal, Mary too is focused on a meal or the food that I am giving to her. And the food that I am providing for her will sustain her in life and it will last forever. Now here, I think again, we need to pause just for a second. Let that sink in. Jesus is saying the food that I'm offering is greater than any other meal that you might be striving to make. It is as Isaiah said in chapter 55, again, that we read earlier in our service. Why do you spend money for that which is not bread and labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen diligently to me and eat what is good. Incline your ear and come to me. Hear that your soul may live. If you're here this morning, you're not a Christian. Ask yourself, what is it that you are striving for today? Are you seeking after some sort of purpose in the world around you? Are you trying to make a name for yourself? Are you trying to impress someone? Find someone, achieve something, live up to someone or something. Jesus says, don't work for that food that ultimately will not satisfy, but instead come to him. For the greater need that you and I have is not found in what is set right before us here on this earth, but what is offered to you and I now through Jesus for all eternity. See, God sent his son, Jesus, into the world to rescue us from this futile striving. And the way that Jesus rescues us from this striving is through his perfect life before God, which is given in our place, through his death, which takes on our sin, and through rising again, which then gives us his righteousness. So that then all who come to him, believing in what he accomplished and taking hold of it as their own, will then be able to find their life set in God and their hope in eternity. Again, if you are here and you're not a Christian, come to Jesus today. But even if you are a believer, sometimes, and you know this, we can lose sight of this truth, can't we? The truth of what Jesus has done for us is we get caught up in what we must do. Even in good things like serving, providing for our families, working hard, doing what has been given right before us. Meaning that a nudge like what Martha gets can often be necessary to bring us back to where our focus must be. And that is Jesus. Now, we're not told what happens next, but I think we have every reason to believe that Martha was moved by the gracious call and the nudge of Jesus. And I believe that she sat down next to her sister, received this meal, the word, from her Lord. Did she learn to serve him with gladness? Did she learn from this moment on to serve him without expecting others to do the same or in the same way that she was? Well, I think we actually get a clue that she did. In fact, Jesus visits Mary and Martha another time, a little bit later. And this is what the Gospel of John tells us in chapter 12. He and his disciples, they come by, and this time we see that Lazarus is with them. He has just raised Lazarus up from the dead in John 11. So now they're eating dinner again at Mary and Martha's house. This time we know 16 guests are present. And as John tells us in chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, it says, "So they gave a dinner for him there. Martha served. Mary took out a pound of expensive ointment and anointed the feet of Jesus. Martha was still Martha. Mary was still Mary. But yet if you read that account, there is something different going on. For when Martha served, we get the impression that she served with joy this time. Her necessary focus had returned, and it was Jesus. And now she used her gifts to complement her love for him, and she served him with gladness. You see, when Jesus is our necessary focus, we can then rightly serve him in the way that we are called to, not to the neglect of our other responsibilities, whether it be to our family, our church, or others, but now we can fulfill what is right in front of us as if we are doing it to the Lord. You see, together, Mary and Martha, they give us a picture of what a disciple of Jesus is to look like. For a disciple, we see here, is a seeker after God and a server of others. Think about that, the full picture of discipleship in Mary and Martha, a seeker after God and a server of others. Yet that balance is only found when our focus is not on what we can do, but is in remembering and what has already been done for us through Jesus Christ. And when that becomes our necessary focus, we are then enabled to, as Charles Wesley wrote, to serve with Martha's hands, but to also listen with Mary's heart. Let's pray.